If we wait until one is at deployment of the technology in the workforce setting, or frankly, in any of the places that we engage in with a chatbot to manage your online bank account, if we wait for those moments, it's too late. We spend a lot of time on AI risk and fear, and yes, I'm sure we may be able to get to that. But on the other side of risk is reward, and I want to spend my time building frameworks of AI rewards in our society. We should not operate from a position of fear here. This is a way for us, frankly, to drive at even a greater equity than we had before. What we need to do is, one, name the problem, make sure that there's representation in these rooms. That is one of the reasons I am behind something like the Lyft AI Act. And then three, having broad goals around inclusion.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to Regulating AI, the podcast that brings global diverse voices together to discuss fair and responsible AI regulation worldwide. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we are thrilled to have Congressman Gabe Amo joining us. Congressman Amo has dedicated most of his career to public service in Rhode Island and Washington, D.C., including roles in the Biden White House and as Director of Public Engagement for former Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo. As a member of the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology, he's been actively involved in shaping AI policy. Today, we'll explore his views on AI regulation, education, and the future of technology in governance. Congressman, welcome to the Regulating AI podcast.
Thank you for having me on. I'm grateful to have an opportunity to share some thoughts on what I know is such an important topic to so many across the world as it evolves and finds its way into every part of our lives.
Wonderful. Congressman, we have a global audience, policymakers, think tanks, entrepreneurs, people who are just fascinated by AI. So for them, can you just tell them a little bit about your journey into public service and how your work has led you to focus on artificial intelligence policy?
Well, I've had an opportunity to work at the heights of government in my short public service career. Actually, it's long at this point. Though I'm 36 years old, I've had the opportunity to work for two presidents of the United States at the White House, working for the Obama White House as a junior staff member in the Office of Intergovernmental Affairs. And then between my White House stints, worked for Gina Raimondo, the U.S. Secretary of Commerce, who, as you know, is playing a major role in AI. But before then, we were at service for our home state, where I worked with her and for her on her senior staff, managing a lot of our external relationships with the cross section of partners that you have, business, labor unions, chambers of commerce, municipal leaders, mayors, town councils, and a whole spate of folks interested in the business of government. And the relationships needed to carry that business out. And then I served in the Biden White House, worked on the president's campaign and started from day one on January 20th, 2021, and served until April of 2023 as the special assistant to the president and deputy director of the White House Office of Intergovernmental Affairs, where I helped provide the perspective of state and local leaders, and then supported those state and local leaders across the country on good days and bad days, emergencies, wildfire, mass shooting, hurricane, building collapse, you name it. And on good days, catalyzing the investments of the administration in people and places. So that was through historic legislation on infrastructure, climate change, and the like. But I also had the opportunity to work on the support of a framework for an AI Bill of Rights for state and local governments to take up. So in that wide experience and having the opportunity to work with state and local leaders and that proximity to making government function, making government respond to crisis, prepare for crisis, and then that exposure to AI via that Bill of Rights framework, I got to be interested in what we will do with one of these most disruptive meaningful technologies that we will have in our lifetimes. And so that's why when I got to Congress, I dug in. And so as a result of my service on the Science, Space, and Technology Committee, I have a front row seat to the beginnings of the work to make government respond and engage AI accordingly.
Well, that's fantastic. You had such a wide exposure at the local government level, at the federal government level, and even working across with business. So I think that's very, very helpful. But Congressman, you've been a very strong advocate for AI literacy, particularly for young students. Why do you believe it's crucial to start AI education at the K-12 level?
Well, I believe that because the future is now. Mm-hmm. We are in a moment where the speed of technology, the speed of innovation is such that if we wait until one is at the age of, you know, deep deployment of the technology in the workforce setting, or frankly, in any of the places that we engage AI, think about, you know, engaging with a chatbot to manage your online bank account. If we wait for those moments, it's too late. When the internet came along, right? I sound like an old man when I say that, but I've lived in a pre-internet in the classroom world and a post-internet in the classroom world. Yeah. And it was never one course. It was never something that was compartmentalized and segmented to a particular part of learning. Rather, I remember learning research skills, learning how to develop complementary presentations of information using the tools of the World Wide Web. And we must do the same as it relates to AI. When I worked for the governor of Rhode Island, I helped roll out a program called Computer Science for Rhode Island, bringing forth computer science skills to those from kindergarten, right? Because the basics, the nuts and bolts, the mathematical and other capabilities that you need, the reasoning on computer science, those elements can be taught to a four-year-old, to a five-year-old. And similar to AI, we know that those elements will be present in so many parts of our lives. We will change the way that we learn. Right. We need to learn for understanding. And so my focus here on AI literacy is about making sure that those who are equipped with the tools of curriculum, of structure, can then make sure that our youngest from K to 12 are prepared to engage thoroughly, you know, as you know, the technology evolves and moves forward.
Oh, that's great. So as you said, the future is now, and equipping our youngest of generation with all the skills that are necessary for this transformative technology. Congressman, the bipartisan LIFT AI Act has gained tremendous support. Can you share with our audience the main objectives of this bill, and how do you foresee it impacting education in the U.S.?
Yeah, so the full title is Literacy in Future Technologies, Artificial Intelligence Act. And that is the goal, is literacy. And, you know, where this fits in the realm of the educational experience is to make sure that the professional development that is necessary for our school leaders are there. There are institutions of higher learning which will serve as partners as a vehicle for the National Science Foundation's funding to go to those institutions of higher learning, to go to the appropriate nonprofits to help in the development of the lesson planning that mm-hmm. is necessary to then get into the classroom. And so where this fits in, right? Mm-hmm. Right now in the United States House of Representatives, we are being proactive on several fronts, mm-hmm. making sure that there are frameworks for learnings around AI. So this bill fits mm-hmm. into a broader package of mm-hmm. setting a ground level, a foundational mm-hmm. understanding for these emerging opportunities, and making sure that AI mm-hmm. is not something that is an afterthought. And so the bill is bipartisan because that's what it should be. Mm-hmm. It should be, because the AI doesn't know whether we're Democrats or Republicans unless mm-hmm. we feed it those queries, right? The premise here with my colleague Tom Kane from New Jersey is that we want to be very focused, not overly aggressive, but focused in where we may be able to make impacts in the near term.
No, I think your point is absolutely right. And you are working with the NSF, and the bill makes reference to the NSF working with some of these educational institutions, Congressman?
Exactly. And the NSF as a vehicle, knowing that it is a home of innovation, that it's a place where naturally in mm-hmm. our system, the research capacities, the learnings from the implementation of something like this can then be translated across our country in a meaningful way.
Yes, we had the director of the NSF on our podcast some time back, and he did talk quite a bit about this program. Congressman, you talked about your work at the intersection of federal and local government. How do you see AI impacting local governance and policy implementation? Everybody talks about the federal stuff, but you have a very unique window, having worked on the local side, on the federal side. So you get a dual window. What is your perspective on the use of AI at the local level?
Well, I think there's a multitude, right? You think mm-hmm. about the issue of resilience mm-hmm. and coastal resilience. I'm from Rhode Island. Climate mm-hmm. change is already impacting us. But mm-hmm. being able to, again, have that pattern recognition, to mm-hmm. have the data sets of mm-hmm. Historical floods and storm systems for local planning, that's a remarkable capacity that would take time, that would take up resources, but that can make every community resilient to the impacts of climate change. You think mm-hmm. about housing. Mm-hmm. And being able to understand, residential patterns, to mm-hmm. understand what zoning laws have certain impacts on density, to be able to, again, deploy the volume of data that's mm-hmm. necessary in order to help policymakers execute decisions that are both predictive mm-hmm. in nature and are also verifiable and testable, as opposed to policymaking that is driven by more arbitrary politics, right? Mm-hmm. That can help local government. When you think about all of the, I'll go one step of government up to the state level, right? One of the biggest expenditures in every state is the spending on healthcare. Mm-hmm. So when you think about what we may be able to do in terms of addressing certain populations that mm-hmm. are, for example, heavy users of certain social services, and us routing them to interventions that are more appropriate, that lead mm-hmm. to better outcomes, right? Mm-hmm. You can see similar when it comes to, managing the behavior of traffic patterns mm-hmm. and navigating roadways, mm-hmm. when it comes to issues like helping people manage their debt and financial assistance, mm-hmm. knowing that, people with certain spending habits and patterns deploying debt relief services that help people in a reasonable way so that they can accumulate wealth. So when you look across the spectrum, the access to the troves of data and patterns of human behavior and being predictive about where to intervene and where with the benefits of that, that's the power here. And that's what, you know, we spend a lot of time on AI risk and fear, and yes. I'm sure we may be able to get to that. But on the other side of risk is reward. And yeah. I want to spend my time building frameworks of AI rewards in our society.
No, I think you make a good point, Congressman, that there are some tremendous opportunities. You talked about climate change, climate resiliency. You talked about traffic. You talked about, education. So lots of opportunities at a local governance level is what you're saying that AI could lead to. And obviously, as you said, there are risks in there. Now, Congressman, when you were at the White House, you worked on several national crises, and you kind of alluded earlier to this. How do you see AI playing a role in crisis management moving forward?
Well, certainly on weather, that is probably the shortest path use, especially when you look at a lot of historical information that we were able to surmise. Right now, as we sit here recording this, there's a hurricane about to hit Florida. Yep. And we are thinking about the people there, and we're hopeful that that storm gets weakened and that the impacts on the lives of so many are minimal. But I say that knowing that I have been able to see hurricane seasons, flood seasons, deep winters, and using our knowledge of the historical to predict impacts and then lead to greater preparation for local leaders. That's significant. And so that is probably the highest order use that I could see from a disaster standpoint. But the other things that are pretty valuable when you think about predicting behavior and also giving a historical background is that in my experience, when you respond to these storms, when you respond to these incidents, people are always seeking information, man on the street, right? Who interacts. And so you could see high-level functions of people being in situations of crisis and being able to survey possible solutions through the tech, right? Mm-hmm. You could see someone experiencing a system of a deep freeze and needing to seek out solutions to address a problem in their home, to contact the appropriate authorities, the whole range of problem identification and analysis changes, and the interventions and who's providing that intervention changes as well. So that's from a disaster standpoint, a huge opportunity.
So, as you said, identifying the problem and how do you respond, some tremendous opportunities that exists, especially in a disaster crisis perspective. Congressman, at a recent hearing, you had questioned NIST Director Dr. Locascio about funding for the AI Safety Institute. Can you elaborate for our audience the importance of this institute and how does it fit into the broader landscape of AI regulation?
Well, it is incredibly important for us to stand up an AI Safety Institute out of NIST, out of the U.S. Department of Commerce, is a bold step towards addressing what is one of the most prominent challenges with AI, and it's the mitigation of risk, of making sure that whether it's dealing with malign actors or it's dealing with the the range of companies and private sector actors who are engaged here, mm-hmm. in making sure that we have things like the elimination of algorithmic bias, mm-hmm. When you remove human capacities, are we unleashing the best of ourselves or the worst of ourselves through the large language models, mm-hmm. and the training that the AI, mm-hmm. is going through? So having a unit of government focused here is important. And this is why I was so insistent on talking about funding levels, because my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, for those across the globe, my colleagues who are Republicans, I am a Democrat, have some statutory cuts to the budget, to the appropriations, that would impact the ability of the Safety Institute to get the work done to address all of the challenges and opportunities that we face. Mm-hmm. And so my Republican friends have budgets that want to cut something that is just getting off the ground, mm-hmm. and not providing for success of this institute. So I will continue to harp. We need the federal resources, mm-hmm. To be not only responsive, but to get ahead. Mm-hmm. Because we know that our partners, especially in the EU, have established really strong regulatory frameworks. I mean, I may disagree on how they carried out, but we have philosophical American and European differences. That said, we have to invest the resources. I don't want us to be subject entirely to the big companies dictating how this should proceed. I don't want to inhibit innovation. That's not, mm-hmm. what we want to do, but we want to be prepared. And as government, your number one essential responsibility is to be there for when people need you. And so what the Safety Institute does is it provides that mantra, government being there on the forefront, proximate to solutions and mitigating risks and challenges.
I think you made an important point that we need to make sure the guardrails are there. We need innovation, but we don't want large companies to dominate, and make sure the Safety Institute, which is just getting started, as you said, Congressman, has the resources that are needed. Congressman, talking about safety, AI has the potential to, exacerbate inequalities if it is not handled carefully. You talked briefly about that. How can regulation help ensure that AI benefits all communities, not just a select few?
Yes, and this is the transparency, the openness about the particular models, about algorithms, about how information is generated, and who is usually left out are the people who aren't represented in the rooms of power. And that can be translated to technology. And it's not a function of can be, it has been. There have been studies already showing the difference of impacts of relative to credit scores being deployed for predictions on mortgages being provided, rents, and apartments being offered. There's been bias on the public health standpoint, mm-hmm. Where representation in data sets of Black people, of people of color, is less than that of other communities. So we should not operate from a position of fear here. This, mm-hmm. is a way for us, mm-hmm. frankly, to drive at even a greater equity than we had before. Mm-hmm. And so what we need to do is, one, name the problem. Right. And, I think, again, problem identification is how you get to solution. Right. Mm-hmm. Name the problem. Make sure that there's representation in these rooms. That is one of the reasons I am behind something like the Lyft AI Act, because, mm-hmm. when we open up access to education and pathways and people serving and working in roles, they will bring their lives perspectives to the table, right? So having the right people around the table. And then three, having broad goals around inclusion, right? Because we, you know, I think about the public health benefits so much. Your ability to detect, you know, rare diseases, diseases that affect certain communities, your ability to address, you know, learning challenges, issues that you see patterns, you know, of behavior behind. There is so much potential, but it starts from a place of being deeply intentional. And sometimes, you know, tech is seen as a great equalizer, but it can only be that way if we name it, if we are purposeful, if our steps are ordered towards inclusion at every juncture.
Being deeply intentional, I think, Congressman, that's a great important point. It's a great equalizer, but we need to be deeply intentional and transparent. Finally, Congressman, there's a concern over AI-driven misinformation and its impact on our democracy, you know, whether it's non-state actors, foreign actors, internal, whatever. How do you think, and we have an election coming up pretty soon, how do you think regulations can address this issue?
Yes, I believe this is one of our biggest threats this year is mis and disinfo. And it's a function of, you know, a broader attack on truth. It's nothing new in this world. We've always had varying degrees of tabloid, of speculation, of falsehood being propagated around critical moments. However, this time is unique. It's unique because of the speed with which information moves. And so, look, I think you can do some work on the legislative side, calling for truth in advertising, holding responsible the platforms for, and as we deploy information, making sure that as you know, these large language models are you know, providing responses to queries about election day, about polling places, about information that they've heard from the non aligned sources, the unbiased sources that should be there, that there is verification and partnership with local election officials, partnership with the good, you know, good actors who are centers of providing providing unbiased information. There are lots of those people, and so I hope there is a there's a broad set of partnerships and attempts to provide a clearinghouse and also blocking and the low quality sources from the results and the queries that people put forward. You know, it is going to be obviously a raw period given where we are now, where people are going to question everything. However, the best thing that we can do, the best thing we can do is isolate the noise, the rabble rousing. Focus on objectivity. There's obviously a lot of room for opinion. Let that space exist, but make sure that we have clear alignment on the concepts of truth, of facts, of what has been, not what someone says could be. And so that is ultimately what we have to do, and that's going to require a lot of people to be in this together. You know, I have a great confidence in our capacity to have a very healthy democratic exercise this November. And then we can build on these great tools on AI so that we can have it be part of us fully realizing our democratic values.
No, important points, as you said, isolate some of the noise, look at objective information, and then post our election, find some opportunities for these tools to really give us the benefits that it can. Thank you, Congressman MOU, for sharing your insights on AI regulation and education. You know, your work on the Lift AI Act and your commitment to responsible AI development are crucial, you know, as we navigate this rapidly evolving technological landscape. And to our listeners, remember that shaping the future of AI is a collective effort, as Congressman said, requiring engagement from policymakers, educators, industry leaders, and citizens alike. Join us next time on Regulating AI as we continue to explore the challenges and opportunities in creating a fair and responsible AI-driven world. Until then, stay curious and stay informed. Congressman, thank you so much. This was very helpful. Your perspective and your work on education, the Lift AI Act, your work in the community, local and federal, because we all talk about big stuff, but it's in many cases, it's the little stuff also that matters, climate resiliency, disaster recovery. So thank you so much for being on the podcast.
It's an honor to be on, and let's keep going together.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI, Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.